This is Audible.
Hachette Audio presents The Power of Your Potential, How to Break Through Your Limits, written by John C. Maxwell, read by Christian Steiner. To Kevin Myers, I've observed you for more than 30 years, and I've been part of your life for 20. Your hunger to grow, lead, and make a difference has set the tone for your life. And I've watched you blow the cap off your capacity time after time. As much as anyone I know, you have proven that people can overcome the limits put on them by themselves and others. And your greatest impact is still ahead of you. Acknowledgements. Thank you to Charlie Wetzel, my writer, Stephanie Wetzel, my initial manuscript editor, Linda Eggers, my executive assistant. Introduction. Are you aware of your full potential? If you're like most people, I bet you'd like more out of life than you are currently experiencing. Maybe you're not succeeding in all the ways you desire to in life. Perhaps you're less than fully satisfied with your progress. Are you getting done all that you want to do? Or do you want to see more, do more, be more? What's getting in your way? What's limiting you? Do you know? If you don't know what's limiting you, how will you remove it? You've probably heard the saying, "If I always do what I've always done, I'll always get what I've always gotten." I want to help you do something new and get somewhere new. As we embark on this journey, I want to give you two thoughts. One, change doesn't always have to be drastic to be effective. Two, change is necessary for you to reach your potential. As you listen through this audiobook, be on the lookout for where you need to change your focus to become more aware of your potential. In part one, on ability, you will be asked to work on some things that may not be natural strengths. You will find that difficult. Growth in skill areas, if they are not natural, is often slow and small. That's okay. Every little bit of positive change helps. However, when you get to part two, which is about choices, you will find it to be easier. In matters of choice, changes can be achieved much more quickly. All of these changes, whether difficult or easy, need to be made if you desire to reach your full potential. I want to help you expand your thinking and your ability. I want you to accept the challenge of releasing the power of your potential and changing your life. Are you willing to do that? If so, the process begins with awareness, with learning. 1. Your potential isn't set. Have you given much thought to your potential? Most people think theirs is set. We hear one person identified as high capacity and another as low capacity, and we just accept it. What's your capacity? Have you defined it as high, low, or average? Do you think it's set? Maybe you haven't put a label on it, but you've probably settled into a level of achievement that you believe is what's possible for you. That's a problem. Too many people hear the word capacity and assume it's a limitation. They assume their capacity is set, especially if they're beyond a certain age. People give up on the idea that their capacity or their potential can grow. All they do is try to manage whatever they think they've got. That's too confining. Instead, we need to define our world and ourselves in terms of our possibilities. While I believe 100% that people can grow, change their capacity, and increase their potential, I also acknowledge that all of us have caps on our capacity. Some caps are fixed, but most are not. We can't allow these unfixed caps to keep our lives from expanding. We can't let caps define our potential. We need to look beyond the caps and see our true potential. 2. You can become aware of the possibilities that can make you better. All lasting growth requires awareness. Unfortunately, if you lack awareness, then you don't know that you're unaware. It's a blind spot. You don't know what you don't know, and you can't see that you're unable to see. That's a catch-22. Self-awareness is a powerful skill. It enables you to see yourself clearly. It informs your decisions and helps you to weigh opportunities. It allows you to test your limits. It empowers you to understand other people. It makes partnerships with others stronger. It allows you to maximize your strengths and minimize your weaknesses. It opens the door to greater potential. Here are some things to think about as you work to become more aware of your possibilities. Attention, looking for what you need to know. We naturally tend to see things as we have always seen them. If we want to increase our potential, we must see differently. We need to be willing to look at ourselves and our world in new ways. We need to pay attention and look for what we need to know. Awareness, discovering what you need to know. What stops people from reaching their potential often isn't lack of desire, but lack of awareness. Unfortunately, people don't become self-aware accidentally. On top of that, factors such as excuses, success fantasies that are ungrounded in reality, talking without listening to others, unresolved negative emotions, habitual self-distraction, absence of personal reflection, and unwillingness to pay the price to gain experience, all work against us and prevent us from developing greater self-awareness. Most people who have developed self-awareness have had to battle one or more of these factors to get where they are. They've had to work very hard. It takes desire to make self-awareness discoveries. It takes discipline to look at yourself and reflect on your experiences. It takes maturity to ask others to help you with your blind spots. Becoming self-aware also requires help from other people who can see you more clearly than you can see yourself. You need to find someone, a trusted friend, colleague, mentor, or family member, who can help you, direct you, and provide you with repeated, honest feedback. Discernment, focusing on what you need to do. As you discover things about yourself, you must try to discern where to focus your attention. You can't do everything, so focus on your strengths. When we focus on our weaknesses, the best we can do is work our way up to average. Nobody pays for that. No successful person hires someone to do a merely adequate job. Successful people desire excellence. Excellence comes from focusing on your strengths. Whatever you do well, try to do it better. That's your greatest pathway forward to increased potential. Intention, acting on what you need to do. In my book, Intentional Living, I discuss the major difference between good intentions and intentional living. The former may make a person feel good, but it doesn't actually do anything positive for that person or for others. The key is action. We get results only when we take what we've learned and put it into action. You need to become aware that you are currently living below your potential if you're going to do anything to improve. Even if you've been a highly productive and successful person, you can improve. You can increase your potential. You have more in you that you have never tapped. And there is a path forward to greater potential if you are willing to take it. 3. You can remove the caps from your capacity. The next step in increasing your potential involves removing the caps that are holding you back. We often believe that some of the restrictions we experienced earlier in life are permanent, or we've been told we have limitations that we actually don't possess, and these things keep us from taking the journey in life that we long for These are the chains we need to break. Awareness changes everything. As soon as we become aware that some of our limitations are artificial, we can begin to overcome them. We can blow off these caps on our capacity, which opens the way for growth. I'll talk more about this later. 4. You can develop the potential you already possess. Everyone has potential based on their natural talents. Some areas of potential require very specific abilities, such as those found in symphony musicians, professional athletes, and great artists. Other areas are more general in nature and rely on multiple skill sets. In part one of this audiobook, I'll identify and examine 7 of those areas, and I'll teach you how to maximize the talent you have so that you can increase your potential in each of these areas. 5. You can make choices that maximize your possibilities. You also have other areas of greater potential that rely more on your choices. While it is true that talent is still a factor, it is less important in these areas. I want to help you identify the choices you can make to increase your potential. In part 2, I'll teach you how to do that. And when you pair the development of your potential with the maximization of your choices, you start to develop personal momentum. Momentum is not the result of one push. It is the result of many continual pushes over time. How far can you go? Maybe as you start this journey, you should tell yourself that you're at only 40% of your potential. What would happen if you assumed that you had at least 60% more capacity than you ever believed? There's more in you that you've never tapped. What if it's not 60%? What if it's only 40 or 25 or even 10%? Wouldn't that still change your life? Believing there's more and working to tap into it could be a first step in reimagining your potential and embracing a no-limits life. Caps you can't remove. I believe you can live a life with no limits, that you can go further than you believe and can do more than you've ever dreamed. But that doesn't mean that you don't possess limitations. We all do. Some caps cannot be removed. Think about some of the caps in your life that you need to acknowledge and accept. Birth caps. You had no control over where or when you were born. Nor can you go back in time and change these things. You don't get to choose your parents, birth order, siblings, or upbringing. Good or bad, you have to live with these circumstances and make the best of them. You cannot change your genetic makeup, your race, your bone structure, or your height. Life caps. There are many things that happen to us in our lives that we cannot control. We suffer accidents or illnesses. We lose people we love. We discover that we don't have the talent or ability to fulfill a dream. I call these life caps. We all have life cap stories, some big, some small. We have our nicks and dents. Part of the process of fulfilling your purpose is becoming aware of the things you can't change that limit you, so that you can direct your attention toward the things you can change to increase your capacity. Caps you can remove. Too many people who aren't as successful, productive, and fulfilled as they would like to be mistakenly think they've worked through their issues, they've reached their capacity, and there are no new mountains they can climb. They settle, and they get comfortable. Let me tell you, you're not even close to your potential. You haven't come close to reaching your limits. If you're willing to believe you have more potential and to work at making the most of it, you'll be amazed by the gains you can make. To get started, you need to remove the 2 main types of caps people have on their lives. Caps that others put on us. The first type of limitation comes from the caps that others put on us. People have put caps on you. You're not even aware of some of them. But you don't have to let others' lack of belief define you. Be unwilling to surrender your potential to someone else. Be unwilling to allow others to put caps on you and define your potential. You fought too hard to get where you are to let others control where you are going. Be open to the possibilities that are in you. Caps we put on ourselves. Perhaps the caps that limit us most are the ones we put on ourselves. But we don't have to leave them in place. We don't have to be limited by them forever. I think back to some of the caps I put on myself. Looking for approval from others. When I started in my career, I was a people pleaser. I wanted to be everybody's favorite, and I didn't like rocking the boat. That's not a good mindset if you want to be a leader. I had to learn how to remove that cap. I had to be willing to do what was right or what was best for the organization, even if it made people unhappy or I received criticism. Living in a limiting environment. Too many people simply accept whatever environment they're born into. They think it's normal, and they start to believe they don't have any other choices in life. When that happens, they've created a self-imposed cap on their life. I grew up in a small town in a very conservative environment, where leadership wasn't valued or taught. I wanted to make a difference, and when I began to learn about leadership, I realized that I needed to move from that environment if I wanted to keep growing, learning, and expanding my potential. Having few expansive models of success. When I was a senior in college and was getting ready to become a pastor, I wanted to someday lead a church of 500 people. To me, that was a bold goal, because a church of 500 was the largest I'd ever seen or heard of. About 2 years out of college, I came across a book by Elmer Towns called The 10 Largest Sunday Schools and What Makes Them Grow. I remember reading the first chapter and thinking, wait, this church has more than 500 people in it. I didn't even know such a thing existed. The same was true of the next church in the book, and the next. Each of the 10 churches in the book had more than 500 people in it. The book started to change the way I thought. I suddenly had models of growth beyond anything I'd ever seen. What's holding you back? I bet you want to achieve more, and you probably love the idea of increasing your potential. But do you still have doubts? If you wanted to, you could find plenty of reasons not to strive for your potential. Maintaining the status quo is easier. But that shouldn't stop you. Trying to build your life without removing your limitations and increasing your potential is like building a car in a small shed and being unwilling to knock out the wall to get the car out on the road. Remove the limitations, and the world is open to you. You have great value. You have great potential. You have the ability to achieve greater significance in your life. It starts with developing self-awareness. More specifically, you need to become aware of the caps of your life and recognize which caps you can't remove and which ones you can. Once you know what caps you can remove, I want to show you how to remove them. I want you to become more successful and significant. I'd like to help you reach your potential and achieve your dream. You may be thinking, you don't even know me. That's true. I don't know the specifics of your story. But I know that as a human being, you have huge potential. Every person does, so that means you do. You specifically. You may be facing challenges. Others may not believe in you. You may have a tough past. That doesn't take away what you can do or who you can become. The way your life has gone up to now, it doesn't matter. I want to help you believe in yourself and give you a path forward to increasing all of the potential you have. Write a new story with your life. Hold on to hope as you listen further, and let's get ready to get to work. Awareness questions. 1. What is your strategy for developing greater self-awareness? Who will you enlist to help you learn, change, and grow? 2. What are the birth and life caps that you cannot change? List them. 3. What caps have others put on you that you want to remove? What caps have you put on yourself that are limiting your capacity? What must you do to begin loosening those caps? Part 1. Ability. Develop the potential you already possess. We often talk about potential in the singular, but what if we're thinking about potential the wrong way? Thinking of potential as one thing is too limiting. In this section, I want to talk to you about how we can make the most of the abilities we have. You have dozens, maybe even hundreds. Each area of potential is based on your talents and choices. Right now, I want to focus on the top 7 that rely more on talent than choice, though both are involved. Energy potential. Your ability to push on physically. Emotional potential. Your ability to manage your emotions. Thinking potential. Your ability to think effectively. People potential. Your ability to build relationships. Creative potential. Your ability to see options and find answers. Production potential. Your ability to accomplish results. Leadership potential. Your ability to lift and lead others. By continually maximizing today's potential in these areas, which are significant to a person's success, you will increase tomorrow's potential. Before we dive into each specific area, I want to say one more thing about them. They don't develop in isolation. They work together. It may be helpful to think about this idea in two ways. First, your areas of potential build in layers. This creates a great foundation for your life. It's like constructing a house on solid rock instead of building it on soft sand. It can carry weight. You can create a large, weighty structure that has the ability to stand for a long time. Second, your areas of potential connect to one another. Each time you increase in one area, it has the opportunity to synergize with another area. For example, if you increase your energy potential so that you can push on physically, and you increase your leadership potential, which is the ability to lift and lead others, your overall effectiveness increases. Where you once ran out of energy and stopped engaging with people when you really needed to, you'll learn to push through and be at your best as you interact with them. As you develop your 7 core areas of potential, explore your options. Look for ways to expand your abilities. You will be amazed by the compounding effect you experience. Chapter 1. Energy potential. Your ability to push on physically. There are many capacities that we can increase, but there's nothing we can do to expand time. The number of minutes in a day, days in a week, and weeks in a year are set. Even our time here on Earth is fixed. Our days are numbered. That's why we need to focus on our energy. That's something we can influence. If we want to get more done and make a greater impact on the world, we need to increase our energy potential. Over the years, I've noticed that people who reach their potential do not sit back and wait for things to happen to them. They go out and make things happen. That takes energy. It also takes a sense of purpose and focus. Focus your energy by using the 3 R's to prioritize. Requirement. what you have to do. Return, what you do well. Reward, what you love to do. Doing what rewards you almost always gives you energy. The same is true for doing what gives you a high return. However, for most people, fulfilling requirements is not energizing, unless those requirements line up with returns and rewards. If you have the power to align all three of those, you'll always be energized by your work. You can change jobs. You can talk to your boss and see if what's required of you can be adjusted. Or you can learn to distinguish between what has to be done for the organization and what only you can do for it. Not everything that has to be done by you. If something is necessary but you don't have to do it personally, delegate it. If it is unnecessary, maybe you have the power to remove it from your requirements entirely. Even if you don't have the power to change what's required of you on the job, there are still ways to maximize your energy. If you can answer the following 5 questions and take action based on your answers, you'll see your energy rise dramatically. 1. The plugged-in question. When am I fully charged? I wish more people were as intentional about plugging in personally as they are about plugging in their phones and laptops to recharge. If they were, they'd see new levels of productivity and satisfaction in their lives. So what charges you up? A few of the things that boost my energy include investing in my family and friends, adding value to others, and taking good care of myself physically. What's on your list? If you don't know, then take some time to figure it out. That way, you can be intentional about becoming fully charged. 2. The depletion question. What wears me down? Some of us were raised believing that we could accomplish anything as long as we tried hard enough. But that's not true. While I believe our potential is unlimited, I also recognize that we cannot excel in areas where we have no talent. No matter how hard I try, I cannot become a professional ballet dancer. Gallup has proven with their studies on disengagement in the workplace that the anything is possible myth has led to many people spending years fighting uphill battles by doing what they're not good at. That's exhausting. Why spend your life trying to be what you're not, instead of trying to be more of who you are naturally? Why not figure out what your natural strengths are and develop those for the benefit of yourself and others? It's the difference between swimming with the current and swimming against it. The first increases your speed and effectiveness, while the second depletes your energy. The first makes you shine. The second makes you have to grind. If you grind away in areas of weakness, you'll just get worn out. However, if you shine in your strengths and have the strength and tenacity of a grinder, you'll go far. Another thing that wears most people down is dealing with change. It takes mental, emotional, and physical energy to create change. And the will and discipline needed to sustain change are resources that are more limited than most people realize. What depletes you? Do you know? Have you paid attention to what sucks the life out of you? Do you avoid those things? It's important to recognize what depletes your energy and take action to defend against them. 3. The proximity question. How accessible are my energy pluses? I discovered the proximity principle right after I graduated from college. That June, Margaret and I got married and moved 250 miles away from home. I was ecstatic to start my new life with Margaret. But within a couple of weeks, I realized how much energy I had always received from my parents. My dad's positive attitude and confidence were contagious. And as a young person, I was energized whenever I was around him. My mom loved me unconditionally and was always ready to listen to me. In those days, there were no cell phones, long-distance calls were expensive, and Margaret and I had no money. So we had very limited contact with my parents. That was quite an adjustment for me, because my energy level went down dramatically. People are not the only energy pluses we have in our lives. Almost anything can boost your energy as long as it touches you in a positive way. The key is being intentional about keeping those things in proximity to you. You need to figure out what lifts you up. Look at these categories and see if any of them might be possible energy sources for you. Music, the songs that lift you. Thoughts, the ideas that speak to you. Experiences, the activities that rejuvenate you. Friends, the people who encourage you. Recreation, the fun events that invigorate you. Soul food, the spiritual exercises that strengthen you. Hopes, the dreams that inspire you. Home, the family members who care for you. Giftedness, the talents that activate you. Memories, the recollections that make you smile. Books, the messages that change you. If you discover the things that are energy pluses for you, I think you'll be amazed by how much your energy capacity can increase. 4. The 100% question. When do I need to be full of energy? It's vital to increase your energy as much as possible. It's also crucial to use the energy you have wisely. Use it when you need it, and conserve it when you don't. And know the difference between the two. You need to know when it's showtime every day in your life, no matter what hour of the day it occurs, or how often it occurs on a particular day. At those times, you need to show up and give 100% of your energy. That's the only way you'll maximize your potential. 5. The margin question. Where is the space for the unexpected? You need to know the margin you have in your life. By margin, I mean extra time to breathe, think, and make adjustments. Not only does margin provide space for you to grow, but it also gives you the opportunity to recharge. I have to confess, this is a continual challenge for me. I'm weak when it comes to creating margin. For too many years, I have overscheduled myself. The good news is that I am highly productive. The bad news is that I lose opportunities because I have no margin. Do you give yourself space in your schedule for the unexpected, as well as to recover psychologically and emotionally? In The Touch of the Earth, Jean Hersey writes, "It's extremely important not to have one's life all blocked out, not to have the days and weeks totally organized. It's essential to leave gaps and interludes for spontaneous action, for it is often in spontaneity and surprises that we open ourselves to the unlimited opportunities and new areas brought into our lives by chance. Those gaps allow us to use our energy more wisely." How much have you thought about your energy capacity? Have you assumed that your energy capacity is fixed, that you can't change it? If so, you need to change your mindset. Start paying close attention to what increases or decreases your energy, and begin making adjustments to what you do. Reduce the energy depleters as much as you can. Tap into things that increase your energy capacity, and manage your energy for the things that matter most to you. Trust me, it will change your life. Energy potential questions. 1. What are the activities, people, tasks, and places that sap your energy? 2. What are the activities, people, tasks, and places that give you greater energy? 3. In what areas of your life are you not maximizing your energy and the energy of the people around you? Chapter 2. Emotional potential. Your ability to manage your emotions. Emotional potential is the ability to handle adversity, failure, criticism, change, and pressure in a positive way. All of these things create stress in our lives. I've found that the inability to deal with stress or emotional pressure takes out a lot of people. They give up, break down, or do unhealthy things to try to escape the pressure. However, emotionally strong people are able to manage their emotions and process through difficulties. That allows them to increase their capacity and moves them closer to reaching their full potential. If your emotional capacity isn't high, this chapter will help you to increase it. If your emotional capacity is naturally high, then perhaps you can use these tips to help others on your team or in your family, because most people do not see themselves as they really are. Many people don't want to resolve their problems. They just want someone to listen to them talk. Some people are not emotionally strong, and as a result, they do not cope well with life's difficulties. I've known and talked to a lot of people who have a high emotional capacity, and I've observed what they do. If you can adopt the following 7 traits that I've observed in emotionally strong people, you will increase your emotional capacity. 1. Emotionally strong people are proactive in dealing with their emotions. Emotionally strong people take an active approach to their emotions. They never say, "That's just how I feel. I can't help that." They are never victims of their own feelings. You can do things to influence your own emotions. Maybe you can't control them completely, but you can change them through your actions. All of us are hit in the gut by unwanted surprises, blindsided by negative relationships, and knocked down by blows we didn't see coming. There are times when we want to tell the world how unfair life is, but only by taking action can we pull ourselves out of the pits we find ourselves in. Hoping, wishing, denying, crying, cussing, fussing, moaning, blaming, and waiting only keep us in the pit. The faster we can recover from the shock of the emotion, process it, and move toward action, the quicker our recovery will be, and the more emotionally strong we will become. The choice is always ours. We either continually work on mastering our emotions, or we are continually mastered by them. 2. Emotionally strong people do not waste time feeling sorry for themselves. You can't complain and get ahead at the same time. Moaning about your troubles and moving in the right direction rarely happen together. The way you deal with difficulties and avoid feeling sorry for yourself can be as unique as you are. I love the way PGA pro golfer Richard Lee handles adversity on the course. Early in my career, my mother-in-law could see how when I had a bad shot, I would get really disappointed, and my negative emotions would start to fill my mind and hurt my play. One day she said to me, "Richard, you will always have days when you make bad shots. Every golfer does. As you walk toward your ball, you have a decision to make. Will I dread seeing the lie of my ball and begin filling my mind with negative thoughts and my body with negative emotions? Or will I welcome the ball and be glad I am a golfer, and realize that I have an opportunity to make a great recovery shot?" If you always welcome the ball regardless of your lie, you will more often make good recovery shots. In life, every one of us is faced with bad lies. What will be our response when things are not working out, when bad breaks come our way, and when life isn't fair? What will be our mindset as we find our ball? We can let the bad lie ruin our attitude, or we can welcome the ball. If you can ask yourself, what is the worst that can happen, and then prepare to accept it, you can hit a good recovery shot. If it's as bad as the worst, you can deal with it. If it's not as bad as you anticipated, then all the better. 3. Emotionally strong people do not allow others to control their relationships. When I began my career as a leader, I thought being effective meant making everyone happy with me. I was a people pleaser, which meant that other people's behavior was really in control of my life. Then one day, one of my mentors, Elmer Towns, told me something that really got my attention. "John, the weaker person usually controls the relationship." He went on to explain that emotionally strong people usually have the ability to adjust to difficult relationships, while the weaker person can't or won't. The implications of this are huge. If you are the emotionally stronger person in a relationship, but you are unconscious of the relationship's dynamics, you will conform to the other person's way of relating. However, if you are conscious of the dynamics, you can choose to passively adapt to the other person, or you can take action to try to influence the dynamics or to distance yourself from the other person. Relationships are complicated and can be difficult to navigate. One of the ways that I can keep proper control of my life and not allow others to take that control is to understand that I wear different hats in my life. Husband, father, friend, business person, and leader. The hat I have on determines the way I interact in the relationship. I'm continually making relationship choices throughout the day based on the hat I'm wearing. Emotionally strong people honor their relationships while at the same time guarding against letting others control them, especially in difficult relationships. 4. Emotionally strong people do not waste energy on things they cannot control. Controlling what you can and not wasting energy on what you can't is one of the most important lessons we can learn in life. Emotionally strong people don't waste their energy when they are stuck in bad traffic, lose their luggage, or get caught in a storm. They recognize that all of these factors are beyond their control. Instead, they focus on what they can control. Take responsibility for the things you can control. Attitude. You determine how you think or feel. Time. You determine how you spend time and who you spend it with. Priorities. You determine what is important in your life and how much time you give to these essentials. Passion. You identify what you love and what you were created to do. Potential. You determine where you commit yourself to grow. Devote your energy to these things. At times, this may cause people to be unhappy with you, but you won't be unhappy with yourself. 5. Emotionally strong people do not keep making the same mistakes. It's been said that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over, but expecting different results. When we think about it logically, we should expect the same results from the same actions, yet many people find themselves in ruts, doing what they've always done, but wishing for something different. How exhausting. Why does it happen? Because they never take the time to stop, figure out why their efforts aren't getting positive results, and change course. One of the ways successful people keep their emotional potential high is by avoiding falling into this trap. Sure, they make mistakes, but they take the time to learn from them. They don't follow the old rule of business, which says, when it's over, it's over. Instead, they follow a different rule. It's not over until you've learned from it. 6. Emotionally strong people don't allow the highs or lows to control their lives. Every day contains both positives and negatives. You probably know that you shouldn't let the negatives take you down too low, because that can lead to discouragement. But are you also aware that you shouldn't let your highs take you too high? Successes have a tendency to make us complacent. We start to assume that everything will automatically stay good, so we are tempted to rest on our laurels and try to protect what we have. We can begin to feel entitled, lose perspective, and stop working hard. In the end, both highs and lows have the ability to rob us of reality and limit our activity. How do I limit the impact of my highs and lows? I limit the effect of any emotional high or low to the 24-hour period that follows the occurrence. If I have a great success, I celebrate for 24 hours. My team and I give each other high fives. We relive the victory. We compliment one another, but only for a day. Then we get back to work. We know that yesterday's success won't bring us tomorrow's success. Today's work does. Similarly, if I experience a great failure, I allow myself 24 hours to feel bad, sing the blues, wear black, and grieve. Toward the end of my emotional time limit, I begin doing things that will bring me back to a level of emotional stability. I spend time with a positive friend, play a round of golf, share with someone the lessons I learned in my downtime, focus on the good things in my life, or help someone. Action is the key. Whether dealing with highs or lows, taking action helps you get back on track and regain control of your emotions. That's how you stay emotionally strong. 7. Emotionally strong people understand, appreciate, and grow through their struggles. Many people resist change, want immediate results, and hope for a life devoid of problems. However, those desires make a person emotionally weak. Why? Because life involves struggle. Emotionally strong people expect difficulties and learn to appreciate the growth they bring. Emotionally strong people do not expect immediate results. As they approach life, they know they are in it for the long haul. As they face struggles, they do so with energy and fortitude. They understand that genuine success takes time. They try new things and fail. They run into obstacles, but persevere. They keep going, keep working. They focus on the right decisions they need to make and make them quickly. They realize that they may change their direction overnight, but they won't arrive at their destination overnight. They keep their eyes on the big picture and they don't quit. We can't hold on to old emotional baggage and remain emotionally resilient at the same time. Being an emotionally strong person who has high emotional capacity is about being able to start fresh every day and function with a clean slate emotionally. Emotional potential questions. 1. In the past, have you considered yourself to be emotionally strong or emotionally weak? Why? 2. Which of the 7 practices of emotionally strong people are you best at doing? 3. Which of the 7 practices of emotionally strong people is most difficult for you, and why? What could you do to improve in that area? Chapter 3. Thinking Potential. Your ability to think effectively. Success in achieving goals certainly requires action. But a bias for action has its limits. I discovered a long time ago that if I wanted to increase my overall success capacity, then I needed to increase my thinking potential. Here is the process that I use to expand ideas and improve my thinking on a daily basis. If you can learn this process, it will make your thinking more thorough. As your thinking improves, the number of good ideas you have will increase. And as you take action on those ideas, your life will become better. Great lives are created by taking good actions on great ideas. 1. Think the thought. Value your thinking. Most people do not recognize the value of good thinking. They have thoughts, but they let them go and don't do anything with them. However, when you value good thoughts, it makes all of your thinking more valuable. That is the starting point of increasing your thinking potential. Because I value good thinking, I am constantly asking myself questions to help me discover and develop ideas, such as, where can I find an idea? Becoming a better thinker means having the right mindset. Two people can see the same things, go through the same experiences, have the same conversations, yet one walks away with a flurry of great thoughts and the other without a single new idea. To increase your thinking capacity, you need to become an idea digger. Always look for ideas and try to mine them. How can I use it? A lot of people come across an idea and recognize that it's a good idea, yet they don't do anything with it. They don't follow through. That's a shame, because ideas are like muscles. You use them or lose them. When you get a good idea, you need to think to yourself, how can I use it? How can I maximize the idea? There isn't a single idea that starts out as good as it can be. Every idea can be taken to another level and applied in a way that maximizes it. Anytime you have an idea, you should take note of it and plan to give it more thought. Ask yourself, where can I maximize that idea? If an idea will help your organization, apply it there. Also ask yourself if the idea meets you where you are in your life journey, if it will help you become better in one of your strengths, or if it will help you to grow and get better. When you get one of those ideas, pay attention and prepare to go to step 2. 2. Write out your thought. Clarify your thinking. University President and United States Senator S.I. Hayakawa believed that learning to write is learning to think. You don't know anything clearly unless you can state it in writing. I think there's a lot of truth to that. Writing makes you think things through. It forces you to articulate the thought, and it makes your thoughts visual. That doesn't make it easy. Nobel Prize-winning novelist Ernest Hemingway is famous for saying how bad the first draft of anything is. It may take you multiple tries to write something coherent. I know that was usually true for me when I started my writing career. When I wrote my first book, Think on These Things, I threw away 10 pages for every one I kept. But trust me, putting your ideas down on paper will be worth the effort. 3. Find a place to keep your thoughts. Capture your thinking. Do you know what people's number one time waster is? It's looking for things that are lost. That's why you need a good system for capturing your ideas. And it's why my first goal when I have a good thought is not to lose it. Whether you use your computer, a notebook, or your phone, capture your thoughts so you can find them again. I also want to encourage you to designate a place to find your thoughts. You need to condition yourself to think in certain places. It doesn't matter where it is. Just pick your place and spend time there, and good thoughts will show up. When you have a designated place for something, whatever it is, there is the sense within you that it needs to be filled, and you'll find yourself doing what it takes to fill it. That holds true for your thinking. 4. Rethink your thought. Evaluate your thinking. This step is perhaps the most critical one in the thinking process, because this is where you cull the bad thoughts and set the good ones on track to be improved and become great ideas. Have you ever awakened in the middle of the night with an idea? It happens to me all the time. In the light of day, most of my midnight ideas are not worth pursuing. But that's okay. The only thing worse than not having a way to capture great ideas, and thus missing them, is capturing a bad idea and trying to make it work. If it's not good, let it go. Most of the time, I have pretty good instincts about whether an idea is any good. The good ones still speak to me after 24 hours. The bad ones don't. If you're not certain how to evaluate an idea, ask yourself these questions. Does the thought still speak to me? Will this thought speak to others? How, where, and when can I use this thought? Who can I help by delivering or implementing the thought? If you don't have positive answers, the idea is probably not worth taking to the next step of the thinking process. 5. Verbalize the thought. Express your thinking. To get the most out of an idea, you need not only to think it through and write it down, but also to talk it out. Both are necessary, but the order in which you do them depends on how you're wired. Here's why. Talking expresses your heart. Writing about an idea gives your thinking intellectual weight. It creates clarity in your thinking. Talking about an idea gives it emotional weight. It connects your thinking to your heart. Have you ever noticed that you can think about a tragic time from your past pretty rationally? But when you try to tell someone else about it, you become flooded with emotion and get choked up. That's the heart connection that occurs when you express those ideas. Talking expands your idea. Many times when you try to elaborate on an idea verbally, you expand it. You give it greater life and clarification. Some of that comes from having to express it. Some comes from the nonverbal feedback you receive from listeners when they don't understand what you're saying. Some comes from answering questions people ask you about your idea. All of these things help you improve your idea. They also help you expand your thinking capacity for the future. Are you wired as a natural talker or a natural thinker? Start with whichever comes naturally to you. But be sure to include both solo thinking time and time talking with others to get the best out of your thinking capacity. 6. Put the thought on the table. Share your thinking. I want to encourage you to share your thinking with others to take it to another level. To do that, follow these steps. Bring a good thought to the table. It doesn't have to be a great thought, but it needs to be a good one. Share your desire for others to improve on your thought. You need to want better thoughts more than you want the credit. Ask everyone to participate. People should know that they're either at the table or on the menu. Ask questions. Nothing stimulates improved thinking more than questions. Let the best idea win. When the best idea wins, you win. When you bring a good thought to the table with a small group of good thinkers, they will always make your thought better. Just make sure you bring good thinkers to the table. And as my friend Linda Kaplan Thaler says, make sure you have at least one person who can recognize a great idea. Do that, and you'll always walk away with a better idea. 7. Practice the thought. Take your thinking for a walk. Once an idea has been put on the table and improved by a key group of people, it's time to take the idea out and let more people see it. I think of this as being like taking a dog for a walk in the park. People see it, react to it, and make comments. You learn a lot when you present an idea to people who don't know you, or who won't automatically give you the benefit of the doubt. If the only person who ever hears your ideas is your mother, you'll think all of them are good. Present them to strangers and skeptics, and you'll find out where you really stand. It's always easier to think an idea